This is Roger Bennett, and this is Men in Blazers on Ice, presented by Jägermeister, the extended full-length podcast version of a digital interview which just dropped across the NHL's mighty platforms. A conversation with one of the most dogged, courageous, team-first human beings I've ever encountered, Mr. Keith Yandel of your Florida Panthers. Keith, yes, is the NHL's present-day Iron Man. And I'll say, athletes always talk about the grind. This man laughs at the grind, makes a mockery of the grind. He's a gentleman for whom ain't no mountain high enough, ain't no valley low enough, ain't no agony strong enough to prevent him from taking the ice and leading his team. Be sure to check out the digital video for more. And remember, Men in Blazers on Ice is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, wherever podcasts are distributed, including NHL.com and the NHL app. Rate, review, subscribe, share this with your mates, with your enemies too. We are so grateful to Jägermeister for this partnership that enables this to happen. Jägermeister, the official shot of the NHL, and to me, they're a bolt of human emotion in a shot glass. I raise one to you as we begin this pod, a pretty stunning video version of which, filled with Yandel's upbringing, which instilled the value system that drives him today. It's really remarkable stuff. Can also be found on NHL.com, Men in Blazers Social right now. Enough of that, though. To the pod, here's Mr. Keith Yandel. My guest today is a remarkable human being. The NHL Iron Man, who's in the midst of an epic 12-year consecutive game streak. In that time, he's taken his fair share of pucks, sticks and errant elbows to the face that would knock out lesser men, only to come back to life like Jon Snow and go again. As such, he's the embodiment of perseverance, courage and commitment to the collective that makes hockey great. It's a joy to welcome, from your Florida Panthers, Mr. Keith Yandel.
Yeah, thanks, Rog. Happy to be here.
Keith, I am so glad you are here, mate. You were born in Milton, Massachusetts, home of America's first piano factory, the youngest of three kids in a proper hockey family. You started skating at age three. Your dad coached high school, right?
He played growing up, played in college, and his love for the game continued. He was always coaching, whether it was me, my brother, my sister, and then high school hockey. So he's always been involved with the game, and definitely a guy that we got our passion for the game from.
I loved what you once said about your early memories of skating with your dad's team during practice. You said they were public high school players, but to me, it was as if they were in the NHL.
It really was, and when you're skating with 16, 17, 18-year-old kids, when you're 4 years old, it's the top for you when you're a kid.
You were like, I've made it. It can't get any better than this.
Yeah, it really was, and you're just at a public rink at a cold Randolph High, and my dad skating guys, and he was a bit of a tough coach, so the guys probably didn't even like me that much. Being out there, seeing how big and fast they were, it was an amazing thing. I still remember all those guys. I still see some of them to this day. My dad has good relationships with them, guys that played high school hockey for him 30 years ago.
Sports were your passion, and your family worked so hard to support that passion. Your dad, Buddy, pulled overnight shifts driving 18-wheelers for FedEx. Your mum, Patty, she sounds incredible. She rose before dawn every day to work an office job despite suffering from a debilitating rheumatoid arthritis. Can you talk about your parents' work ethic?
Seeing how hard they work every single day, the sacrifices they made. My parents were working, so they weren't able to get up with us every morning. So we got ourselves to school, me, my brother, and my sister. It was tough days, obviously, but we never thought that we had it any less than anybody else. My mom was a great cook, so we always had good food on the table. It wasn't high-end stuff, but we always had a good plate of food in front of us and good laughs at the dinner table. They never talked about work at home. Once they checked out, and something that I've taken into my own life, where when you're at home, you're at home. And it was a great family life. Looking back now and seeing what they did for us is an amazing thing.
Your dad first, to watch him work a full shift overnight, and rather than just sleep it off, go back out and coach the game he loved to high school kids. What did that teach you, Keith?
I think the main thing it taught me is his love for whether it was his job at FedEx or coaching high school hockey or running hockey camps or coaching me, my brother, and my sister, it was whatever he was into, he was 100% committed to it. We'd joke about it, the man would get like 6-7 hours of sleep a week, and he'd be waking us up to go to practice at 6 a.m. on a Saturday, Sunday. Me, I'm a guy who I need 8-10 hours a night of sleep, so I always look back and amazed by how he was able to work so hard and always be willing to take care of us and take us to hockey and do whatever we needed to do.
What was the most important lesson about hockey that he taught you?
The biggest thing that he pushed was being a good teammate and always being there for your teammates. And if you commit to something, you always got to be there, and you're going to miss some friends' birthday parties and high school dances or middle school dances, but the biggest thing is you make a commitment to your team and you're always going to be there for them.
You took always incredibly literally, Keith, as we will discuss, but to see your mum battle pain, arthritis can feel truly crippling. Was that a formative life lesson for you?
My mom's probably the strongest person I know. She never complained about anything, about being in pain. And you could see on a Saturday, Sunday, she'd be on her feet all day, and with her arthritis being bad in her feet and hands, all she wanted to do was sit down. But there was always something to do, whether it was to take us to baseball or basketball or hockey. She was always there doing it. The toughest person I know.
They both worked a couple of jobs so that you and your siblings could play every sport that you dreamed of and you never wanted for equipment. Baseball, basketball, hockey, you played them all. Am I right that you were not the kind of kid who grew up single-mindedly thinking NHL or bust?
Yeah, no, I never even thought it was opportunity to play in the NHL, especially as a kid. It was always just, I love to play, I love to go to the rinks, and all you wanted to do was play hockey. And then as soon as summertime comes, you play baseball, then lacrosse in the spring, basketball. So whatever the season was, we were playing games. Never did it even occur to me that I could play in the NHL. And my parents never thought it was a goal of mine or even something that we'd be able to do. They were just doing it to give us life lessons, have friends, and stay competitive.
Your older brother, Brian, took the pathway of many New England hockey heads, went to the University of New Hampshire, which is often the next step. But you decided to pass on college and leapt into the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League with the mighty Moncton Wildcats. Can you take us back to that decision in which you realised hockey was more than just a joy, but it was something you could get paid to play?
I wanted to go play college with my brother at UNH. I thought it would have been cool for my parents to see us together. We'd never played on the same team, so I had to take a summer class, and I remember calling my mom halfway through the class and said, come and get me, I can't do the school stuff anymore. So the good mom that she was, she came and got me, and she tried to talk me off the ledge, and I said, I'm gonna go up to Canada and play, and I'm gonna try to take a crack at this professional hockey thing. They weren't too happy about it. They wanted me to get my education. My family always preached getting our education, but I was 18 and it was my decision.
Off to Canada you went. Did it feel like a sure thing, or did it feel like a real gamble?
It definitely felt like a gamble for me, especially right away. I remember getting up there, and I was just playing high school hockey, prep school hockey the year before. And the first day of camp, I wasn't skating. I was just out there watching the guys. And I remember calling one of my uncles, and I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. These guys are good. And he was like, listen, once you get on the ice, you'll realize how good you are, and you'll be able to do it. And I was able to go out there and had great coaching, great teammates up there.
You were also a great player, Keith. You're a left-handed defenseman with a love of picking a moment to charge up the ice and take advantage of your offensive gifts. One of your teammates from back then described you as, quote, a player who was riverboat gambling all the time.
Especially when I was younger, it was one of those things, always trying to be up in the play, always trying to be a part of the offense. And when you get to the NHL, you're not able to do that as much. You have to tone it down a little bit, or you'll get exposed on the defensive side. So I had to tone back the riverboat gambling mentality and try to focus a little bit more on D.
As Kenny Rogers would say, you've got to know when to hold them, you've got to know when to fold them, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You certainly did, because your gamble paid off. After just 3 seasons of high school hockey and 1 junior hockey campaign, you were snapped up in the 2005 NHL entry draft, selected 105th overall in the 4th round by your Phoenix Coyotes, and your debut, October the 11th, 2006, against your Red Wings at the iconic Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. Were you like, here I am, watch out League, Yandel gonna set you on fire? Or is it more about feeling a real sense of awe and gratitude?
I was just really excited. I didn't know if I was going to play one game, two games, three games. I was just excited to play in that first game. Being coached by Wayne Gretzky and the guys that were in that locker room, I remember looking around before the game being like, I can't believe I'm in this league and getting paid to play this game.
Your mum and dad flew out and sat behind the bench.
I actually remember seeing them before the game. We were staying at the Ritz in Detroit, and my parents, we'd never stayed at a Ritz before, so my parents were all excited being at the Ritz, trying on the robes. So I remember it being a moment where I was like, all right, I get to see my family staying at the Ritz. I remember during the game too, just seeing my parents, how special it must have been for them. Having kids of my own and having nephews, I would do anything to see them play in the NHL and what it would mean to me. I couldn't imagine how it felt for my parents. I'm sure they figured all the hard work for them paid off, and being able to see me play in the NHL and be happy with what I'm doing, I'm sure they took a lot of happiness from it.
That joy, that gratitude, that sense of wonder, when I watch you, it seems like it has never gone, because you seem to be a bloke that first and foremost revels in the joy of team. You recently said that your biggest claim to fame in the NHL is that you've never had room service on the road.
I enjoy going out to dinner with the guys. You get to sit around, talk to guys, get to know guys more about their families, where they grew up. And sitting in your room by yourself is one of those things that would get old real early for me. I always try to be surrounded by people.
I mean, there is so much in that statement to me, Keith, that the thing you love is the camaraderie, the friendships, the relationships. Locker room camaraderie, perhaps the greatest camaraderie of all, band of brothers. Can you describe it to us who've never made the NHL?
You're in a locker room with these guys from all over the world. You know, once the pucks drop during that season, whenever you're playing with them, they're going to have your back. And you don't share the last name with them. They're not blood related. You're teammates, and they're going to go to war for you, and you're going to do the same for them.
You are a gem who has lived that, putting the team first in a way few other athletes can even contemplate. The date, March 22nd, 2009. Does that register with you, Keith?
Tax season?
That is the date on which you last missed the game, although you didn't know that at the time. None less than Wayne Gretzky, then the Coyotes head coach, sent you to the press box to sit out a game as a healthy scratch. Do you remember that moment?
My first 2 or 3 years, it was you play a game, sit a game, the rotation was 6-7D, so it wasn't one of those things where it was out of the ordinary sitting out a game. It was probably the other guy's turn, and the other guy that was playing was David Hale. He was my roommate, so we were rooting for each other to do well. I don't remember the game. I'm sure the game before I messed something up where I didn't deserve to play.
So there wasn't part of you in that press box being like, Gretzky, who the heck does he think he is?
Never once questioned anything he said. No way.
The first game after that, against Edmonton, Coyotes win 3-2. Your streak had begun. After how many games do you have to lace together for it to actually become a thing, a streak that people are talking about, conscious of?
I remember one time it was actually, we were in Edmonton. We had played Vancouver the night before, and I had hurt something and a game time decision whether I was going to play. And I remember a head coach, Dave Tippett, who had a streak over 500 games of playing consecutive. He came in and he said, hey, it's going to hurt to play, but if you can battle through it to keep your streak going. And I didn't really know anything about it. I don't remember how many games I was at, but I remember him telling me that. And your coach is telling you they need you on the ice. And that was motivation for me to be out there.
But when he said that streak, were you like, what streak? Or you like, oh my God, I have a streak.
I didn't know what he was talking about, and then I remember one of the trainers telling me. So, yeah, up until then, I had no clue.
You were once asked, how do you handle it? And you essentially said, I try not to think about it. The less I think about anything, the better off it is for everyone.
That's anything in life. I'm a day-to-day guy. Don't really like to make too many plans, whether it's a couple days in advance or not. Most of the time during the season, I couldn't even tell you what day of the week it is. I'm best when I'm told what to do and just show up and do it.
Oh, you and me both, Keith Yandel. But the street thing, it must occasionally affect you. Does it ever feel like a person, a kid, something that walks alongside you in life, something that you are forever linked to, that affects you, the way you think, the way you present yourself to the world, and almost have to feed, have to sustain?
Not really. It's one of those things where you're just showing up and doing your job, and I try not to worry about it too much, whether it's a practice day or game day. You always want to be on the ice.
I'm not telling you something you don't know here. Hockey, it's a warrior's game. In the end of the night, you're covered in puck-sized bone bruises, slashes, the occasional shattered tooth. Bodies need a break. How physically do you handle it?
We have great trainers that take care of us, able to keep our bodies to where we need it during the season, whether it's getting a massage on a game day, getting ready, whether your legs aren't feeling too good, or late nights after a game.
2015 playoffs, you were a New York Ranger, and you experienced a grade 3 shoulder separation. Grade 3 is the real deal. And it happened in game 1 of the first series. You went all the way to game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Serious question. Do you process pain differently to other humans?
I don't know. See, I feel like I'm a baby when it comes to pain. But yeah, that was a painful couple months where you're playing almost every other day. I could barely even tie my skates. One of the trainers would have to help me get my jersey on before the game.
Mentally, what do you tell yourself to persuade yourself when your body is signaling, maybe not tonight, that you say yes and you drag those Yandle bones back onto the ice?
I remember one of our trainers, Phoenix, he used to say, just shut your brain off and go play. And you gotta block out everything. And it's like anything in life. You got stuff going on at home and you don't wanna worry about it during the game, where if you can just shut your brain off and try not to think about anything, it's sometimes for the best.
You once said, I think it stems from my background that my parents went to work every day. They didn't work easy jobs. They went every day to make ends meet for my brother, sister, and me. And I never saw them take a day off.
It goes for everyone in my family and my uncles, aunts. Now I see my brother and sister doing it, and you don't see anyone asking for a handout. Everyone's getting up in the morning, going to work, working jobs that are a lot harder than mine, and having family where you can see what they've done so hard and for so long, I try to do the same.
You've had some close run things. Thanksgiving 2019, when you were hit by the puck in the first period of a game against the Carolina Hurricanes.
You know, I remember it hitting me and then spitting out some teeth and knowing it was going to be a mess. And I remember walking in the locker room and then the hallway in Carolina to the trainer's room is filled with mirrors. I remember looking and seeing my mouth and it just being a complete mess. And I didn't have great teeth to start with, so I figured at least at the end of the day I'm going to get some new jibs, which was probably not worth it, but it was something I got out of it.
It's hard to watch, and it didn't even happen to me. You lost 9 teeth. You broke your jaw, you missed the second period, and then shout out to NHL emergency dental technicians, you returned for the third, broken jaw and all. Keith, how?
You want to be out there. A couple of days later, I was talking to Bobby Orr, and he said, you melt a long way from your legs to be able to skate, and hearing that from a legend, I was happy I came back and played that game and didn't disappoint.
You spent 25 hours in the dentist chair, 25 hours, which is the exact amount of time Americans think the average Englishman actually spends at the dentist in their whole lifetime. What goes through your brain as you're sitting in that chair? What are you thinking?
That was a lot of shutting my brain off during that. Shout out to Marty Robbins, the team dentist. I got to know him really good during that time. Got to make a new friend, but a lot of tough hours sitting in the chair 5-6 hours because I'd have to go on a day we didn't play and trying to find ways to squeeze in time to fix some teeth and a lot of exposed teeth at times. So it was a tough couple months for my mouth. My kids didn't like seeing it. So as soon as we could fix it, it was for the best.
Be honest, when you're in that chair, does the streak cross your mind at all?
When they had to break the jaw back in, we played the next day. So as he was doing it, I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to play. And then as soon as it was over, it was kind of a temporary pain where it was 5-10 minutes of not so comfortable work. But after that, it was get ready for the next game.
I mean, that's the incredible thing. You took the ice Sunday evening against the Buffalo Sabres. You were once struck on a shot by fellow Panthers defenseman Aaron Ekblad on the back of your foot against Boston, December 2016. Tom Rowe, then coach, told reporters you'd be, quote, out for a while. And if the shot had hit you half an inch higher, that might have been true. But instead, you bounced back the next night in Philadelphia, attempting 4 shots, skating nearly 24 minutes.
Aaron Ekblad has a hard shot. So when that hit me, when I took my skate off to get it looked at, I thought, might be some time before I'm able to put the skate back on. But that night, the trainers came to my room when we got to Philly and were able to work on my foot, loosen some stuff up. And the next day, I was lucky I was able to play.
I want to be clear, the streak is not everything. You have been incredibly productive along the way. Three-time All-Star, an assist machine. You have the most power play points for active defensemen. Has the arc of your career, the time, has it gone slowly or quickly? Has it felt like a slog, an ultra marathon filled with muscle aches, bruises, or has it been one long party?
It's gone so quick. I still consider myself a young guy. Obviously, I'm not when we get kids, guys on our team that are closer to age with my kids than they are to me. So I still think I'm young and I still try to tell myself I'm young, but I know it's been a while. I've enjoyed the ride as quick as it goes to think of all the memories that you have and all the friendships that you made. You got to think back and take it in sometimes.
One of the many things I love about you, Keith, your health regimen, your secrets. I would have thought you had like a Tom Brady-esque regimen where you obsess about plant foods, body chemistry, Svengali healers. But the pre-game meal you swear by.
Penne vodka with chicken, Caesar salad, some water with some lemon, that's about it, and a big glass of scotch after the game.
I was going to say, you were once asked to describe your recovery process, and you said, I like the cold tub after the game, glass of scotch, that's about it.
Relaxes me and takes your mind away from the game a little bit.
You are now 54 games away, as we speak, from surpassing the great Doug Jarvis's record as the all-time NHL Ironman. 964 games. Can I ask you, in your own words, what does the streak mean to you?
It's something I try not to think about too much, but it's also something I take pride in. And anytime you can play in the NHL, whether you play one game or 1,000 games, it's an accomplishment. And for me, it's something I definitely take pride in. It's like not getting room service. You're always going to be there for your teammates, have dinner, and even going to practice and having fun during practice and keeping the mood light. It's one of those things that you got to take pride in and take enjoyment out of, and I definitely do.
Those two streaks on the ice and the flip one about no room service, they both come from exactly the same place.
Fear of missing out.
How have you changed in the process? How is Keith Yandel different between the beginning of the streak and the end, whenever that may be?
When I was younger, I was a little bit more of a wild card. I was a little bit crazier on the ice. I remember being more mouthy. But I think the older I've got and with my wife and kids, I've been able to calm down a little bit on the ice and off the ice. So for me, it's just having that rock solid family life back home.
You once said making the NHL was something I never thought would happen. Essentially, Keith, you were a kid that never thought they'd play a single game of hockey in the NHL. To have gone on and played 1,000. Ultimately, is that the achievement? That's what's important.
Yeah, it really is. And when I got my 1,000th game, getting texts from people as just a kid from South Fairbanks Road, you made it to the NHL, and the people that I grew up with that you're still friends with, you see how much they've taken interest in my career over the years, and hopefully I've been able to bring them some enjoyment. And you know, you get to put on an NHL jersey, and 0.1% of the people in the world get to do that, and something I definitely take a lot of pride in and something I'm grateful for.
That's why, to be honest, it's such a joy to watch you, Keith, on the bench, shouting random crap out, juicy, proud, sonk. One of your teammates once said, he's just like a kid in a candy store out there playing. And I think that's part of why he's so successful. He has so much fun doing what he does, and he's not afraid to do it his way.
You know, during the game, when you're sitting there watching, seeing guys make plays and how good of players that they are, whether it's guys on your team or guys you're playing against, when you're sitting on the bench and you got the best seat in the building, I always try to keep myself hyped up, whether it's yelling at guys making a good play, because I was a young guy once when guys were yelling at me if I made a good play, so I know how far that goes, and I'll never let a good play go unnoticed and always try to tell the guys and hype them up.
Is that the ultimate lesson to take from your career? Not the streak, Keith Yandel, but the approach to the game and to life itself. Something you've actually said you learned from your parents. Their motto, if you do what you love, you won't work a day in your life.
Even days we have tough practices where you know it's going to be a tough day, whether you're going to get bag skated or have some battle drills, I still try to bring as much happiness as you can during a practice like that. And for games, even if you're down big, you still got to have fun with it. And I think for me, it's just always having fun, always realizing how lucky we are to play in the NHL. What hockey's brought to me my whole life is all my friends I've made through hockey, even kids I grew up with at home that only played house league hockey or street hockey. It's something that I owe my whole life to. I've been able to take care of my family and myself thanks to hockey, and I'll try to give back to this game till the day I die.
To you, Keith, to your family, to the continuation of your epic journey, thank you.
Thank you.
Courage. Keith Yandel, what I admire about that man is tenacity, yes, but the love of the game that lies inside him and has not diminished one iota. Also his awareness of gratitude that he gets to do what he gets to do night after night after night. What a remarkable and humble bloke. If you're listening to this, please, please, please subscribe, rate, review, and share it with your friends. Revel in the back catalogue. There's episodes with Matthew Tkachuk, Patty Maroon, Ryan Reeves, Mark Scheifele, Sebastian Aho, and more. Means the world to us, as does our partnership with Jägermeister. Oh, now go and watch the Keith Yandel video on NHL.com and Men in Blazers social. It was the honour of a lifetime to work on these stories. To more courage.